From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. Happy April 3rd, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony, and delighted to be with you. All right, coming up on today's Washington Watch, as his campaign for re-election continues to flail on issues such as the economy and immigration, President Biden delivered an address on health care today, and he has seen repeated false claims of how his policies are helping American people.
It isn't just saving seniors money. Along with other reforms, it's taxpayer money. We're cutting the federal deficit. And people say, well, this costs some money. Guess what? It's costing drug companies money. It cuts the deficit by $160 billion. $160 billion. I'm serious. Think about it.
Wow. But are Americans really getting what the Biden administration claims to be giving? Well, Georgia Congressman Buddy Carter will be joining me here in just a few moments to try to sort through the president's claims. And as President Biden and the Democrats are doubling down on abortion and making it a major campaign issue leading into November, yesterday, a Tennessee judge convicted four pro-life Christians of FACE Act violations. What were they doing? What was the violations? Well, they were peacefully praying and singing hymns at an abortion facility. South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman will be joining me to discuss how pro-life Christians should be responding. And we're continuing our daily segment this week on election integrity. And, of course, this is coinciding with the release yesterday of my new book entitled Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. It's now available wherever you purchase books, including Amazon and a host of other places. And I obviously encourage you to grab a copy. We'll be talking about that a little bit more. But Dr. Mark Harris will be joining me in just a little bit to share his personal story about the importance of election integrity, and you don't want to miss that. And as you probably already know by now, in the lead up to Easter, President Biden declared last Sunday, Easter Sunday, as Transgender Day of Visibility. The left has argued that it was only inevitable that this was happening at some point because Easter falls, of course, on a different calendar date each year. And to some extent, they're correct about that. But the left has designated, catch this, they have already designated more than 100 days annually for LGBT celebrations. It's almost a third of our calendar year. So what should we make of this? Well, I'll be talking about that and how Christians should respond with FRC's David Clawson a little bit later. So a lot to cover today. You don't want to miss it. If you do, by any chance, our website is tonyperkins.com. Obviously, a lot of great resources there for you, so be sure to keep that website handy. All right, let's jump into the first topic for today. President Biden, you can say, went fishing today. Not literally, but politically. He held a White House event today seeking to drive attention to health care as potential bait for voters while he's struggling to find some sort of campaign issue to connect with the voters. The Biden administration continues to claim that the intentionally misnamed, and I'm going to say that purposefully, the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act that passed in 2022 has somehow helped consumers. But the truth of it all, it is a massive government overspending that is mandated upon the American people, and it has strangled economic growth in this country. Well, joining me now to discuss all of this is Congressman Buddy Carter. He's a member of the Budget Committee, as well as the Committee on Energy and Commerce. He represents the 1st Congressional District of the great state of Georgia. Congressman Carter, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Always great to see you, my friend. And congratulations on the new book. I look forward to reading it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right, we've got a lot to cover right here, Congressman Carter. The Biden administration thinks somehow that health care and the Inflation Reduction Act are winning campaign topics for them. And I just kind of scratched my head over this. But you, a leader on all of these issues, you're saying that the president's health care schemes are they're making things worse. Tell us why.
Well, they are making things worse. And let me preface this by saying that the Inflation Reduction Act, which, as you noted, is a misnomer, it's misnamed, it shouldn't be that at all. But and that's certainly not what it did. But that is, without question, in the 10 years that I served in the Georgia State Legislature, in the 10 years that I've been in Congress, it is the worst legislation that I have ever seen. At least the prescription drug portion of it is. What it is doing is killing cures. You know, America is the greatest innovator in the world. We have had more innovation in America with drugs than any other country. I practiced pharmacy, as you know, Jody, for almost 40 years. As a result of research and development, as a result of innovation, I saw nothing short of cures, nothing short of miracles through research and development. And yet what this legislation does and what this president's healthcare legislation does is just kill cures. It's been estimated by the University of Chicago that it'll result in 130 fewer cures coming to market in the next 10 years. Now, what's that going to be the cure for? Is it going to be the cure for Alzheimer's? Is it going to be the cure for ALS, for cancer? We don't know. Even if it's one, and by the way, the Congressional Budget Office has said that it will be at least one every year for the next 10 years that we won't come up with a cure. Already, drug companies have stopped in research and development and drugs that were in the pipeline because of this piece of legislation. His whole healthcare record is pitiful. It is awful. I mean, here we have a president who's allowing this southern border to be penetrated by so much fentanyl that it's killing 200 Americans every day. It's ridiculous.
Wow. Well, this is precisely why I wanted you on the program, Congressman Buddy Carter. Your background, nobody knows this. I don't. That I'm aware of in Congress any better than you. But, you know, while the Biden administration continues to push all this health care stuff, it's interesting to me, startling to me, to some extent, that he's enlisted Senator Bernie Sanders, Mr. Medicare for All himself, who's trying to push all of this. What do you make of that? What does that tell us?
Well, you know, I have to be quite honest with you. I've actually seen some progress in prescription drug pricing in particular. Remember, again, I'm a pharmacist. I practiced pharmacy, retail pharmacy, for over 40 years. I was the one who had to go to the counter and tell the senior citizen how much their medication was and watch them make a decision between buying their medication and buying groceries. I was the one who had to go to the counter and tell the mother how much her child's antibiotic was going to be and watch her in tears as she tried to figure out how she was going to pay for that antibiotic. I set as my focus when I became a member of the state legislature and especially in Congress that I was going to do something about prescription drug pricing. We've made progress, but we haven't made enough progress. Now, look, the drug companies need to do a better job with their pricing. There's no question about that. I'm not going to take up for them. They need to do a better job. But that's not where the problem is. The problem is in the vertical integration that exists, where you've got the insurance company that owns the pharmacy benefit manager, that owns the group purchasing organization, that owns the pharmacy, that owns the doctor. That vertical integration results in higher drug prices and higher healthcare costs. And that's something we need to bust up. The first thing I did when I became a member of Congress was go to the FTC and ask them to look at this. Look at what is happening here. Finally, about a year and a half ago, they undertook a study to look at the impact that PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, are having on prescription drug prices on independent retail pharmacies. Now, they've been in that study for a year and a half already. They have said, we are retracting some of the statements that we made about PBMs in the past. They're no longer relevant. We in the past said they were beneficial. They are not beneficial. They are not helping drug prices whatsoever. So this is a big problem that we need to address in this country. But this administration, they don't get it at all. Now, I will say that Bernie Sanders understands that portion of it too. He understands that the prescription, the pharmacy benefit managers are a problem. So does AOC. Now, let me tell you, when you get conservatives and you get Bernie Sanders and AOC all on the same page, and that is fighting against the PBMs, you know you've made some progress here.
Well, that is an interesting dynamic how all that comes into play. Well, let me ask you this. You referred a little while ago, we both did, made reference to the Inflation Reduction Act. And one of the things, I played a clip as we were coming on, that the president claims that the Inflation Reduction Act cuts the deficit by $160 billion. Can you set the record straight and tell us what he's hoping that the American people don't know about this piece of legislation?
Well, again, as you pointed out in your opening statement and your opening monologue, but it is misnamed. It is not the Inflation Reduction Act. In fact, it's going to increase inflation. We all know that. Where he's getting these numbers of saving on the deficit is beyond me. This is not going to be the case. And again, Jody, what good is it going to do us to save money if we're killing cures, if we're killing innovation? This is one of the things that I've struggled with ever since I've been, as a healthcare professional, ever since I've been a member of the state legislature and of Congress, and that is helping people to understand that well care, keeping people well, and finding solutions to these problems in the end will save us money. The more people we can keep off of dialysis, the more people we can keep from having to have insulin, that the more we can save. Think of how much Alzheimer's is going to cost us in the future. If we can find a cure for Alzheimer's, then we can not only save a tremendous amount of money, we can also save the wear and tear, if you will, that it will have on caregivers. You've seen it. You know people, and we all know people.
Absolutely.
Who've tried to take care of someone with Alzheimer's and the toll it takes on them, on the caregiver, physically. Yes. Just think, if we could get a cure for Alzheimer's, how much we could save.
Let me, that's a great point. And yeah, I don't know that there's a family that hasn't been touched by something like Alzheimer's, and you bring up an excellent point. If I can, we've only got a little over a minute left. Let me switch gears. The Department of Energy canceled plans to refill our depleted strategic oil reserves because the prices are at 5 months high. Your role on energy and commerce is huge. This is another broken promise from the president. What's your take on this?
Again, you know, what the president did with the strategic petroleum reserve was absolutely wrong. He used it for the wrong purposes. That's why we passed the Strategic Production Response Act, so that any president, Republican or Democrat, has to have a legitimate reason to use it. In 2022, we had over 600 barrels of oil. 600 million barrels of oil. Now we're down to around 330. And why did he use it? He used it for political gain, to bring and try to keep the price of oil and gas down. Remember, when he took office, the price of gasoline, was $2.39 a gallon. Now we're bumping up around $4 a gallon again, and it'll probably be more than that before it's all said and done. But that's not
Thank
what
you.
That was supposed to be for.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Congressman Buddy Carter. Always great to have these dialogues with you. Thank you so much for coming on the program with us today. All right, friends, coming up, Democrats have shown that they're all in when it comes to pushing abortion for the upcoming elections. Well, how should we respond to it all? Congressman Ralph Norman joins me right after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/pro-life-men to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony, and glad to have you on board with us. All right, the Biden administration continues to bring the full force of the federal government to target pro-life Christians. Just yesterday, a judge convicted four pro-life Christians of violating the FACE Act. That's the federal law that was passed during the Clinton administration. But these individuals were simply peacefully praying and singing hymns at a Tennessee abortion facility back in 2021. Now, despite the Biden administration's Justice Department failing to demonstrate that these individuals did anything to block access or to inhibit the activities of the staff, those who have now been convicted face up to a year in prison and thousands of dollars in fines. It's just mind-boggling. This is the type of thing you would expect in other countries, but now it's happening right here in the United States. We've seen the Biden administration ramp up this type of targeting of pro-life Christians ever since the Dobbs decision in 22. But is this just yet another example? Well, joining me now to discuss it all is Congressman Ralph Norman. He serves on the Rules Committee, the Budget Committee, Financial Services. He's from the great state of South Carolina, representing the 5th Congressional District there. Congressman Norman, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Jody, so nice to be with you, and it was good seeing you the other week, and I'm glad your book is out. I plan to get it.
Well, thank you. Get it and give it to a lot of friends as well. All right, listen, let's talk about this pro-life stuff. This is just getting, it's ramping up to, I mean, it's worrisome. It's bothersome. These actions from the Biden administration's Justice Department, I mean, it does, on the one hand, demonstrate the importance of elections. But also, I mean, why Christians need to be remained in the political process. Your initial thoughts as to what happened yesterday?
You know, I saw the four were convicted, Jody, that only the federal government can bring this type of an action. The only one that can overrule DOJ as the Attorney General, and good luck with that. We know where Merrick Garland's going. No, this is a weaponization of our federal government. It's aimed at Christians. Ever since this administration took office 3.5 years ago, they've gone after Christians. They've gone after pro-life centers. And isn't it amazing that you can have cities torn up, buildings burned, looting, people hurt? You don't hear about that. You don't hear about the consequences. Yet if you sing and are just peacefully being at centers like they were, and then charge them under the FACE Act, which is ludicrous. And this happens in third world countries that are dominated by rulers, dominated by those that run Venezuela, Cuba. And no, it's startling, and it just shows you how we've got to have a change in administration, and it couldn't come too quick.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen that the Democrats are all in on this issue of abortion, and they are making it a campaign issue, unquestionably. We dealt with this a little bit yesterday, but yesterday the House Democrats held a field hearing on this topic of abortion. In fact, here's what House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries said during that hearing. I'd like to play it and get your response to this.
We are here today to all make clear our unwavering, unyielding, and unequivocal support for reproductive freedom, because reproductive freedom is under assault.
All right. How should pro-lifers, be it elected officials or just citizens, how should we respond to this push that's coming from the left?
Well, one, we understand that this is just an attempt to shield the American people and not remind them of the disaster that's going on in America, from the invasion at the border to crime in the streets to what's happening in Israel. This is just an attempt to retain power, and they're using the abortion as a launching pad to try to keep them in power. I don't think it's going to work. Retain the rights of reproductive rights of women. When you really parse that down, it's okay in the killing of a child. Even in some of the hearings I went to, at a perfectly healthy baby at birth, and they drag in these different witnesses that have horror stories of a doctor not being able to take a child that doesn't have the fluid around him. That just doesn't happen from what we're told with obstetricians that, sense the life and death potentially of a mother. But it's just their attempt to retain power, and they're using abortion issue as one to go on.
Yeah, and we have to face the issue straight up. I mean, we have to stand for life. And what you said, they can call it reproductive health or whatever they want to call it, but at the end of the day, their position is killing babies, and we stand for life. If I can, Congressman, switch gears on you a little bit in the little time we have remaining. Congress is currently in recess, but there's going to be a lot of budget battles that are now behind us, obviously. But as you come back, there's the budget battles preparing for next year, among a host of other things. What do you anticipate taking place when Congress comes back next week?
Speaker Jordan's going to have to decide, Jody, if he's going to rely on Democrats to under House suspending the rules in the House to pass his agenda. As you notice on the trail of appropriation bills, only, I think, 109 voted for it, 112 voted against it. He did not have a majority of Republicans. Mike's going to have to decide if what hill he wants to die on, which I thought was sealing the border. But he's going to have to get the Republicans together, and I hope he will do that. He is a good man. He's a Christian man. I've been disappointed in what's taken place so far. I'm not for motion to vacate now. But hopefully he will take a tough stance and really get this country back on a firm financial footing, which doesn't mean spending money without offsets.
Well, and some of the leverage points have to include things like the border, as you mentioned. Do you think there's a will on your side of the aisle to stand for the border real quickly?
He's going to have to be tough on it. But, he Mike gave up his leverage when he said, we cannot shut the government down. Well, I'm sorry. I think hopefully if he had worked it, we would come to a consensus. We can't sustain the invasion for another 8 months until a new office hopefully comes in. And he said that was the hill to die on, but it didn't happen in that case. So we're back to zero.
Well, it's got to happen soon. Thank you so much, Congressman Ralph Norman. Always great to see you, my friend. God bless. All right, after the break, we're going to continue our segment on election integrity with a look at and a discussion with someone who went through it personally. Stay tuned. Much more coming your way right after this break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Good afternoon. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Again, sitting in this week for Tony, and I'm honored to do so. All right, as we continue our focus on election integrity, I would again like to remind you that this week I released my new book entitled Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. I strongly encourage you to get a copy of this book. It is available wherever books are sold. In fact, thanks to many of you, it was first in Amazon for new releases yesterday, and we're extremely grateful and honored for that. But I don't know of much more important of a topic, and there are many, many. But election integrity ranks up there as one of the most important. Now, I want to say to you that this upcoming segment here is brought to you by FRC Action, which I am honored to be president of. But I want to speak now with someone who knows firsthand about the issues of election integrity and the lengths, the extremes the left will go when it comes to elections. In 2018, Dr. Mark Harris, a longtime pastor in North Carolina, he ran for Congress. He won the race. He was declared the winner. He was prepared to start his new career as a member of Congress. He was at orientation when he was informed of just what the left will do to capture power. I, frankly, often thought about him while writing this book on election integrity, but I'm honored to have him now as my guest. Dr. Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Jody, it's great to see you, and congratulations on the book. Absolutely love the title, and I think it's going to continue to be a number one bestseller.
Well, thank you so much. All right, let's talk about your story. What happened to you in 2019? You'd been declared the winner, then what happened?
Well, as you mentioned, we had already gone to Washington for our orientation segment, and while we were there, there's 2 weeks of orientation, as you know, and we went through the first week. We came home for Thanksgiving. We went back through the second week, and on Tuesday of that second week, Suddenly, we get word that the State Board of Elections, who had met to do their ministerial duty of approving all of the races and that had already been certified by all of the counties or canvassed by all of the counties involved, suddenly an individual who was an activist on the State Board of Elections made a motion to pull our race from that list to be certified and made a statement that he had become aware of some things that had gone on in his part of the state, things that had gone on for years. Those were his words, things that had gone on for years that I can no longer turn a blind eye to them. We had no idea what in the world he was talking about. Over the course of the next 24 hours, it would come out that there was an accusation and it was being made that somebody on our campaign had, who was working for our campaign, had been involved in ballot harvesting. And that was all we knew. And that individual was denying it and saying, no, he had not done that. And that just set off a whole series of things that we would go through in, over the course of really the next couple of months that would end up in me not being seated in Congress, a new election being called by the State Board of Elections, Mark Elias getting involved. And it was just a fiasco at every turn.
So there you won the election, you're in orientation, and literally it was taken away from you. A new election is held and someone else ends up going to Congress. Now, let me ask you, and what I think and also a very important part of all of this, Dr. Harris, is that the number of ballots that were in question were nowhere close to even changing the vote.
That's correct. I mean, they had my lead on election night had been 1,860 votes. They had kept counting provisional ballots and absentee ballots by mail that were coming in over the course of those days, as you know, they always do. And they had managed to get my lead down to 905 votes. And it almost seemed in hindsight that there was something magical about getting it below 1,000. But there never seemed to be. If that fact in the county where it was in question, if they had done away with all the absentee ballots I'd even been awarded, they'd done away with all of those, I still won the election by over 500 votes. And the result of having a new election meant that 282,000 people who had voted in that election had their votes just set aside by the State Board of Elections.
All right. Well, there's no doubt this experience has given you an enormous understanding of the extremes that some will go in order to take away elections and to get their will. What steps can we do we need to continue to do? What do we need to do as voters? We need confidence in elections. What would you suggest?
Well, obviously, this was a situation that became a perfect storm. I mean, I've told you in other conversations that everything that could have gone wrong seemed like it went wrong. I got sick in the process, ended up in the hospital, came back, went through this hearing that had no due process, quite frankly. The State Board of Elections became the prosecutor, the judge, the jury, and the executioner all in one with no accountability whatsoever. So I think all of us need to be aware of that. But I will say with great confidence that a lot of things have changed even since 2018 here in North Carolina and certainly since 2020. Our state legislatures here and in other states have taken some really good steps. If you were to ask me, what do I think is important? No question, voter ID is at the top of the list. I personally believe we got to get into paper ballots. That are certainly counted. I believe that if you shrink the number of days of early voting, and one of the things we've seen in North Carolina that made a great difference
this
time.
We're going to have to wrap up.
Okay. This time, we made a decision that absentee ballots by mail had to be in by election day at the close. That was huge. You don't wait a few days after for them to come in. So those are just practical steps we need to be taking.
Thank you, Dr. Mark Harris. We appreciate you sharing your story so much. All right, friends, much more coming your way on the Transgender Day of Visibility and more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Washington Watch. Welcome back. And again, I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony. All right, no doubt by this point, you know the story. The Biden administration couldn't help itself. They proclaimed last Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility. And Christians, rightfully so, all throughout the country were offended by the administration's mockery of Easter Sunday. And the left has defended this move by proclaiming that their Transgender Day of Visibility always falls on March 31st. So it was just inevitable that eventually it was going to coincide with Easter, the Christian holy day. Now, I don't remember presidential proclamations of Transgender Day of Visibility during any previous administration, especially not on Easter. But given the way that the LGBT movement has literally captured our calendar, what happened last Sunday frankly, should be of no surprise. They now have over 100 days on our calendar for celebration. That comes to, like, if you broke it down, like two every week that are celebrating something in the LGBT community. Well, joining me now to explain all this is David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldviews here at FRC. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Jody, and congratulations on the publication of your book.
Well, thank you so much. Glad that the day has finally come. Appreciate it. All right, listen, before we start, I believe this is an issue worth our attention, no doubt. And I know you believe that as well. But to counter what some on the left are saying, why should Christians concern themselves with presidential proclamations like this one, the Transgender Day of Visibility, falling on Easter?
Yeah, Jody, I think that's an important question. And because, you know, the fact that the Biden White House puts out proclamations and issue statements, this is something that White Houses have done for decades. Why does it matter? Well, it matters because proclamations, statements of administrative policy, these things set the priorities of a given White House. The proclamations, these statements show us exactly where the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration is focused and putting the resources of the federal government. And I think what this particular episode reveals is really what the D.C. Archbishop Wilton Gregory said when he was on CBS on Sunday, where he said, you know, this in one sense shows that, you know, Joe Biden is what he would call a cafeteria Catholic, meaning, you know, the president kind of picks and chooses what's part of Catholic doctrine he wants to promote and then kind of ignore some of the teachings that he doesn't like. And I think really if I had to boil this down, Jody, this whole episode shows us that this White House is laser focused, as well as the Biden campaign is laser focused on appeasing a part of the electorate that cares deeply about these, this ideology, this identity politics. One stat, Jody, I just did this before I came on the show. I actually did a word count on the Easter proclamation that the White House put out. Their Easter proclamation was 94 words. Their Transgender Day of Visibility statement was 639 words. So I think that right there in just a statement summarizes the priorities of this administration.
Wow. Well, I think you hit it on the head, and I think people need to understand this, that these proclamations are, in essence, proclamations of priorities for the administration. And that's why they make these proclamations, because they deem them as priorities. And so this tells you exactly where this administration is coming from. You would think, in fact, I don't think anyone could think otherwise, that the White House knew that this was going to draw a reaction from Christians, and yet they did it anyway. So what does their moving forward with this kind of proclamation tell you?
And I think that's a big part of the story, Jody, because it absolutely, the White House knew, they knew well in advance that this was going to fall on Easter. And, you know, their defense has been, well, we've always done this. Well, that's true. In the last 3 years, they've done this. It's, of course, the only time an administration has ever done this. The Trump administration, the Obama administration didn't bother with this, you know, this kind of faux fake holiday. But it telegraphs, I think, that the priorities of evangelical Christians, of conservative Catholics, are really not the priorities of this White House. And to their credit, so to speak, Jody, the White House, if you just look at what they've done the last couple of years, the policies that they've promoted much more align with the people that would care about a Transgender Day of Visibility than the people who would probably observe Easter. You look at things like the pushing of the Equality Act. You look at two summers ago, 99 embassies around the American embassies around the world flew rainbow flags, and 132 embassies around the world put out statements commemorating June as Pride Month, including embassies in states that are very socially conservative. But it just shows that it's kind of an ideological imperialism that's driving this White House. So, Jody, they absolutely knew what they were doing. I don't think they cared. But if I may say, Jody, this actually isn't working the way they thought it would work. I think one thing we need to realize is that you can push against biology, you can push against nature, you can push against these things with your ideology, but the more you push for visibility, increasingly it's backfiring, and we're seeing that with the transgender issue, Jody. I know this program has covered it, but even Europe, that was ahead of the United States in some of these experimental, you know, cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and surgeries for minor children, England earlier this year announced that they were shutting down one of the main clinics that was doing these experimental procedures on minors. In this country, we've seen over the last year or two, dozens of states are putting protections in place to protect minor children against these experimental surgeries, to protect women from biological men going into female-only spaces. So again, in one sense, Jody, this push for so-called visibility, the more everyday Americans learn about this kind of agenda, the more they actually say, this isn't anything we actually want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I guess if there's one area, and I've referenced this a couple of times, but if there's one area that the left was correct in all of this, it was in their statement that it was inevitable that eventually one of these days was going to fall on Easter, saying that they have March 31st. But what probably the vast majority of people do not know, at least from my understanding, counting this, there's like more than 100 different days now that are annually devoted to LGBTQ plus causes. So again, what do you make of that?
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, when you think about a culture, you think about a society. This is true of ancient Israel. You know how ancient Israel would structure their year around, the three pilgrimages you would make to Jerusalem. You think about our culture, our society, Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter, how we orient ourselves around, with our liturgies and our practices and our family gatherings. The holidays that a culture recognizes tell you a lot about a given culture. And it is true, Jody. I just very quickly Googled on one of the LGBT organizations some of the holidays they recognize. I won't read all of them, but just I don't think a lot of Washington Watch viewers would know that April 6th is actually set aside as International Asexuality Day. April 18th is Non-Binary Parents Day. May 24th is Pansexual and Pan-Romantic Awareness and Visibility Day. Jody, I don't even know what that means, and I don't really want to know what it means. August 14th is Gay Uncles Day. October 11th, National Coming Out Day, and it goes on. I think we need to realize what's happening here. Those who are driving the moral revolution realize that holidays, days that we set aside for recognition, they matter. They begin to catechize a people. They begin to inculcate what is right and what is wrong into a people. And so the left, they realize, I think, what they're doing, trying to really colonize the calendar. And instead of celebrating Christmas and Easter, we're going to celebrate these other holidays based on gender, based on ideology. And I think we need to realize what's going on there.
Colonize the calendar. That's a descriptive expression for it, and that's powerful. All right, let's get some practical guidance here, David Clawson. You are an expert in Christian worldview. Let me give you a scenario. We have a Christian, let's say, attending a school or work, wherever they may be. They are in an environment that celebrates one of these LGBTQ days. How is that Christian to respond? What do they do?
Yeah, a scripture that I would give any Christian, Jody, is Ephesians 4:15. Paul writing to the church at Ephesus, where he encourages the believers there to speak the truth in love. And so I think both of those principles, sometimes people think those compete or those are somehow pitted against one another, being loving and being truthful, but they're not at odds with one another. And so I think we need to be people of love. We need to be known by the fruits of the Spirit. Christians should not be known as gruff people or rude people or mean people. We need to be known by love and joy and peace and patience and all the other fruits of the Spirit. But we can't compromise what we know is true. And so very practically, I don't think Christians can celebrate something that is objectively wrong. For example, the question, do you attend a same-sex wedding? The advice I've given, I know other pastors and leaders have given different advice. I don't think a Christian in good conscience can be a witness at a wedding that is consecrating something that God's word says is objectively sinful. Preferred pronouns. Do you use the preferred pronouns? In my view, Jody, that's telling a lie about something as fundamental as that person's biology and their anatomy. So I think it's okay to potentially use a given name. Sometimes names are, the name Jesse or can be for a male or a female. I think we could maybe use given names, but we can't use preferred pronouns when we know that violates not only biology, but what God has revealed in his word. And so more could be said about this. I think the closer someone is to a person, there's more moral obligation to really speak true things to that person. So it's very contextual, but bottom line, Christians cannot tell a lie. They cannot go along with something where God's word has spoken very clearly.
Very good advice. You know, I think one of the areas that brings a lot of confusion for believers, you mentioned to exercise love in all things, but there's been some muddying of the water in understanding love. Many people, including many Christians, have come to believe that love means, in essence, affirming someone in their current state of lifestyle or whatever it may be. But that's not what love is.
No, Jody, it's not. Love, you know, the Bible actually defines God as love, and God is fully loving, and he's full of truth. God, you know, Jesus himself says, I am the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And so I think that that distinction you make, Jody, the world screams for affirmation with the identity politics that is just plaguing our nation. We cannot affirm sin. Now, we can love somebody who's a sinner. By the way, you know, all of us are sinners. All of us have fallen short of God's glory, as Paul tells us in the book of Romans. So we love sinners. God loves sinners, but we don't affirm someone in that sin. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, Jody, Paul actually says, you know, he lists a group of sinners, people who were known by their habitual practice of various sins. And he says, such were some of you, but you were washed, you were justified, you were bought by Jesus Christ. So again, loving versus affirming, helpful distinction.
There's a very strong distinction there. All right, switching topic in the short time that we have, and we've discussed this many times on the program, but abortion is going to be on the ballot this coming November. And yet there's a number of states that are going to have abortion referendums up for vote, literally, this fall. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so since the Dobbs case, June 24, 2022, which sent the question of abortion policy down to the American people and their elected representatives, wherever abortion has appeared on the ballot, including conservative states like Kentucky or Montana, and even in Ohio in the fall, the kind of the pro-abortion side has won. And so the left is being very intentional, Jody, by putting abortion on the ballot in as many swing states as they possibly can, including Florida. The Florida Supreme Court just said that in November, an abortion referendum can appear on that ballot. Now, thankfully, in Florida, it's a 60% threshold that needs to be reached to amend the Constitution. But in 15 other states, it's only 50% plus one, Jody. And so this is something I think where Christians really need to engage, pastors need to engage. I get that, you know, when you're looking at two candidates on a ballot, there might be some pluses for one candidate, some negatives for another candidate. We need to be crystal clear when abortion is appearing on the ballot, Jody, innocent human life is at stake. And we don't have to guess what God's opinion is on abortion. We have a thus saith the Lord, Psalm 139, Luke chapter 1. And so if I'm a pastor, if I'm a leader in any state where this is going to be on the ballot, and they're making efforts right now, Jody, in Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, and South Dakota, we need to be getting word out that this is going to be on the ballot in November and that Christians need to make sure they're voting from their biblical values formed by God's word.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it saddens me to recognize, frankly, that abortion referendums have not gone our way since the Dobbs decision, as you brought up. But we cannot surrender on this. I mean, we have to keep pushing forward. I think our country overall is still oriented to defend and protect life. And Christians right now need to stand up for that, as do pastors, as you said. David Clawson, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for the incredible work you do on worldview, Christian worldview there at FRC and beyond. God bless you. Thanks for having it, for being on with us.
Yes, thank you, Jody.
All right, friends, that wraps up another edition of Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back tomorrow at the same time, bringing the news your way with a Christian biblical perspective. God bless. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.